produced by Jeffrey Chrysalius, Joseph Cottrell and Ken Fuller. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 603. Yes Album Listening Guides, Tales from Topographic Oceans, Part 6. Alan White's drums with Joe Cass.
Hi, this is Trevor Rabin, and you're listening to the Yes Podcast.
Welcome to episode 603 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a few moments. You can always get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, we are back to the epic in-depth study of Tales from Topographic Oceans. We asked the ever-generous drummer of Yes tribute band Total Mass Retain, Joe Cass, to join us to talk about Alan White's contribution to the classic album. You won't be surprised to hear that Joe managed to help us to uncover a wealth of detail about the percussion on the album and the musical and personal character of the late, deeply missed Yes stickman. Thank you to Joe for his insights. I've had no time to do a proper update on all that's happened over the past week, but please do visit the YMP discussion group on Facebook and the x.com at Yes Music Podcast feed for all the details. However, it's worth wishing John Anderson a very happy 79th birthday and noting that Steve Howe's damaged finger seems to be sufficiently healed to allow him to play again this evening after having to cancel some shows on the US tour. Also, here's an audio contribution from Tapio.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Mark. And hello, everyone listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Congrats on the 600th episode. I really enjoyed that one. My name is Tapio, and I thought I'd just chime in on the podcast with some thoughts on the recently released Anderson Bruford, Wakeman and Howe box set, which includes the Evening of Yes Music Plus live recording. The box set was released towards the end of last year. I had some trouble getting my copy from the UK, but after a few months of sending emails and packages back and forth, I finally got my copy of it, and it consists of six discs. There are four CDs, I think, yes, four CDs and two DVDs worth of material. The CDs include two CDs of the actual concert at the Shoreline Amphitheater, and the same concert is included on one of the DVDs in film form. And then you have a radio interview disc of three press interviews that the guys gave during 1989. And then you have a fourth disc, a CD disc, including the King Biscuit Flower Hour radio broadcast, from which the live material is based on. And then you have a bonus DVD with music videos and some behind-the-scenes footage, which I found really interesting. So here's my thoughts on the thing. The Evening of Yes Music Plus live album is, I think, some of the best versions of classic Yes material that you're going to find from the 80s, at least. You have longtime members, Mr.'s Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman and Howe. And on the bass, on this occasion, you have Mr. Jeff Berlin, substituting for Tony Levin, who was ill at the time. It would have been great to have Tony Levin playing the bass, but, you know, these things happen, and nothing we can do about that. But Jeff, I think, plays really well, and it's a great performance. And you have a couple of additional musicians. You have Milton McDonald on rhythm guitar, and you have Julian Colbeck playing additional keyboards and backing vocals. And so you have a total of seven musicians playing on this live album, but you would hardly notice them from the filmed footage. You barely get a glimpse of Jeff Berlin, for example, the film focuses very much on the main four guys. And from the track list, you have John Anderson taking a solo slot, Time and Word, Honor of the Lonely Heart, and Tique Bois. Then you have Steve Howe playing The Clap and Mood for a Day, and then Rick Wakeman taking his solo turn, which is a great solo turn. I think Rick really showing off his virtuosity there. And then you get Yes Classics. You have Long Distance Runaround and You and I. I've Seen All Good People. You get Close to the Edge in its entirety, a great version. You get Heart of the Sunrise, Roundabout, and Starship Trooper, and then you get material from the ABWH debut album. You get Birthright, Themes, Order of the Universe, and Brother of Mine. So yeah, that's the set list. And as I said, great versions of All Around. The playing's really good. All of the guys are in top form. My main issue, I think, with this material is actually Bill Bruford's snare drum sound. I mean, Bill Bruford plays great. He's one of the best drummers, and his playing on this material is fantastic. But the snare drum sound sounds very, very plastic, I think. And it's due to the fact that he's playing the Simmons electronic kit. He occasionally on this concert uses an acoustic snare drum, but most of the time he's playing the Simmons snare drum. And it really, really cuts through from the mix. And it hasn't dated well, I think. All of the other sounds from the Simmons kit, you can tell it's a Simmons kit, but it's okay when put into the mix. But the snare drum sound is, at least for my ears, it cuts through really roughly from the mix, and that's my main gripe with the mix of this album, which I think is taken straight from the pay-per-view audio stereo mix. It hasn't been remixed at all, and I don't think they can remix it whatsoever. I think you have to use the original stereo mix if you want to release this material. The other thing is Steve Howe's steel guitar gets really muffled in the mix. You can't really hear it. It would have been great to hear it on And You and I, but you know, it is what it is. Other than that, it's a great concert, great set list. I'm not a big fan of the ABWH debut album material per se, but these live versions give, I think, some added energy into those tracks. So I think I prefer the live versions to the studio versions. Okay, the DVD, as I said, includes the entire concert. It's been polished, so the picture is as good as it gets. The sound quality has also been polished, but not remixed, so it's probably as good as it gets. The bonus discs, including the music video material, is interesting, but not, I think, in the best quality available, and not essential material, but interesting nonetheless. The radio interviews are very interesting, however, in poor sound quality. So you have to accept that for what it is. But still, it's interesting to hear the guys talking about what their plans for this band are. There's some really funny and interesting stuff, and they were planning on making this project last much longer than it did, but then the whole union thing happened, and yeah, we all know what happened next. But anyway, interesting stuff in the radio interviews, but you have to get accustomed to the poor audio quality. So the last bonus disc is the original King Biscuit Flower Hour radio broadcast, and this really doesn't add anything to the whole thing. It's just the same material, but with added radio commercials and stuff, and it's only half the concert, so you get Time and a Word, John Anderson's solo, Brother of Mine, and You and I, Heart of the Sunrise, Long Distance Run Around and Roundabout, and that's it. So you only get half the material, and in slightly worse sound quality. An interesting disc, but for completists only. So, all in all, this is, I think, the definitive version of the ABWH, An Evening of Yes Music Plus material, the live material from this tour. So I recommended, obviously, for that reason. It's a bit on the expensive side, but if you're a fan of this part of Yes's career, then this is, I think, essential material, with gripes and all. And, you know, I did have the original two-disc CD as well, but I still think this box set is a really good value for your money if you can afford it.
Thank you very much indeed for that very useful review. And finally, before we speak to Joe Cass, here's an update you may have seen on Facebook about John Dee's amazing BBC Tormato tour recording. He says, "Some more good news. As you know, the BBC has given me a 24-bit copy of the official BBC master recording of this show. But in the last week, someone else has sent me a soundboard recording off the mixing desk of the first six songs of this Wembley concert. The great news is that this contains the full opening music as well as Future Times and Rejoice, live tracks which have previously been unavailable. As many of you know, the BBC never broadcast Future Times and Rejoice, and they don't have the masters for these tracks. This soundboard is from the same show as the BBC recording, but it's a very different mix. Up till now, properly recorded versions of these tracks have been missing. This soundboard recording is extremely rare. I didn't know it existed. So I now have an urgent request. If you have a really high quality copy of Wembley 1978, please check if it has Future Times and Rejoice on it. If it does, please contact me. I'm asking because if you've got a soundboard of this show, your copy might be better quality than mine. In closing, we now have proper recordings of every song that was played at Wembley in 1978. My BBC master has Madrigal, the Rick Wakeman solo, and the full version of Roundabout. As you know, the BBC didn't air Madrigal and Rick's solo, and they only aired an edited version of Roundabout. And now we have a high-quality soundboard of the opening music and Future Times and Rejoice. I've nearly finished compiling the 24-bit master of this show, and I'm going to send to Warners. I want to make sure that I send them the very best quality version of this show, hence this request. Many thanks, John Dee." So if you can help out with that, you can contact John via Facebook. Thank you to everyone who got in touch in any way this week.
Yes Music Podcast, 12 True Summers.
As always, it's fantastic to have Joe Cass with us today, and Mark is here as well. Joe, of course, you should know Joe. He's the drummer with Total Mass Retain, the Yes tribute band, almost the official Yes tribute band, I suppose you could say, as they keep being mentioned by by Yes themselves, and know all the guys very well. And the reason we want to talk to Joe about the drums on Tales is because he knew Alan really well and knew Alan's drumming, and of course has played Alan's music many, many times himself live. So welcome, Joe.
Hey, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to be here with you guys. Thank you.
Great. So first question for you. Tales was Alan's first studio recording with the band, and we know that Steve and John Anderson presented the material to the others and they were a bit skeptical about it. But you knew Alan well. Does it surprise you that he was able to fit into the creation and recording of Tales so well?
It's a great question. I often think to myself, oh my God, this is Alan's first album with Yes. What an experience, right?
Yeah.
I do think that being thrown into the deep end for Close to the Edge on that tour was sort of all that was clearly necessary to be able to fit the mindset and the capability side of doing the four large pieces of Tales. And one thing that I always find very interesting is what I would call some of the more tame approaches to certain fills or certain parts on Tales versus the more raw and maybe ferocious approach on things like Close to the Edge when you listen to Progeny or Yes songs, or even you take something like Ritual on Yes shows and just see how the tempo and how Alan's playing it. So I think there was certainly a mindset that Alan went into the studio with to fit, I guess, the majesty of the sides of Tales. But I love to be thinking and analyzing the difference between the live production of Tales versus the studio. But dialing that back to your question, yeah, I think it must have been an incredible experience for Alan to have such sort of creative input into such a large body of music.
Yes, indeed. He did fantastically well, as we know. But Tales itself, as you've already said, is a huge album to look for Alan's contribution in. And apart from drums and percussion, he also composed and added piano and did a turn on backing vocals, it seems. And I think this gives us a clue as to the man himself, doesn't it? He was much more of an all-round musician, wasn't he? Not just a drummer.
Yeah, there's a lot of times where Alan, it's documented that Alan presented parts on piano and other instruments to the band, you know, turn of the century, things on magnification, like in the presence of. And funny enough, you know, you mentioned my relationship with Alan, and that's kind of a lifelong story, but I was very lucky to be a little kid and got to know the band and got to know Alan, and that just continued year after year of attending shows and events. And eventually it was like, well, this 7-year-old is now, you know, buying Stella's at the bar kind of thing. And there's been many times where I've talked to Alan about music and he'd say, well, you know, I wrote that part, or I can, you know, and it was always a very like proud look on his face. So I think more than we realize, or maybe not yourselves who are, you know, very studious about this, but more than the general population realizes, Alan's contribute a lot to the music and the ideas that go into the structure and the melody and the chords of Yes music.
Yeah. And do you think that that fits his general personality outside the band? Is that, you know, he seemed to us, and we did interview him once, which we're very pleased we managed to, he seemed to be the most generous character. And do you think that that's combined with his generosity as a musician?
Absolutely. I could almost imagine these crazy ideas being brought to the band and Alan being the new kid on the block, so to speak, maybe being perhaps the most receptive to, well, what can I do here? What can I add to this? How do we make this work? Assuming that there could have been Chris Squire or Rick Wakeman or anybody looking at them cross-eyed thinking, you want to do what? You know?
So the stereotype of Alan is that he was, quote unquote, just a rock drummer, particularly compared with Bill Bruford. So how would you compare the two?
So I agree that that's a misnomer. It's easy to identify the powerhouse aspect of what Alan brought to Yes at that period. And I also think that's sometimes mischaracterized, because if you go listen to like live Yes 1971, Bruford is pounding out Yours Is No Disgrace, right? It's not as light and defined as you would expect to be. So Close to the Edge on the album is very purposeful what it is. And I would imagine that in 1972, 73, Bill's approach live might have had more ferociousness to it. But definitely, to your question, Alan's powerhouse playing is sort of what people stereotypically attribute to the difference between him and Bill. But if you think about the time signatures, the reversing of beats, like I know you all talk about Tremato all the time, but from the period of Tales through Drama, and there's even a lot of it on things like 90125, the switching of where the beat lies below the rest of the band creates a dynamic. So if Bill is focusing on jazz and purposeful strikes, Alan's doing the same thing. There's all these purposeful rhythmic changes that change the feeling of the beat and then bring it back. So I think people just like headlines, and the easiest headline is Bill's a jazz player and Alan's a rock drummer. But go ahead and try to learn that stuff off of Tales Relayer through drama and tell me that it's straightforward rock and roll. And then we'll talk about, you know, is Alan just a simple rock drummer?
Yeah, yeah, I agree entirely. And there's so much variety, to back up what you've just said, of drumming and percussion on Tales. And I think that's probably key to Alan's contribution. He was so adaptable. You've got the full kit drumming and very creative use of toms, for example, I think, on Tales that I've been listening to this week specifically for Alan's contribution. And often fans talk about that great battle sequence bit in Gates of Delirium on Relayer, but there's plenty of percussive mayhem on Tales as well, isn't there?
Yeah. I once said to Alan, so how did you do all of the different percussion that is sort of like on the ancient, that consistent, I'm trying to think of a way to describe it, but as the band's doing the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and you have all those sounds, like your sticks hitting things, right?
Yes.
And he just looked at me and he said, well, that's trade secret. You know? So, you know, there's obviously documented footage of Yes during the Going for the One session, standing around with all forms of percussion for the Awaken recording. And I have no doubt that that's the type of thing that Yes did in many instances, whether it's the battle scene of Gates or in the percussion section of the Ancient. And in Ritual, there's not just two hands playing drums and percussion. And I've often thought to myself, if I was trying to play the Ancient, what part would I strike? Which parts would I strike? Because there's clearly just a regular tom rhythm, dum 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 dum, right? Mm. And then there's all the clinging, clanging things. And then it's, to me, I imagine Anderson's doing a whole set of things, whether they're planned or just in the moment. So there's multiple layers of percussion that I imagine Alan was behind, probably mostly with John. At laying out the foundations and filling in the spaces on a song like The Ancient.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I also think a lot of it was probably also overdubbed as well. I mean, I don't think they did this all in real time either, but
no.
I mean, they probably had to assign it and do certain things live, right?
So, yeah.
Right.
So another question here, we have a question from one of our listeners, was on the opening chant from side A. Do you think that it's likely that Alan was on the low harmony backing vocal for that part?
I've always imagined that Dawn of Love. Like, I've always imagined that that low part was Alan, because it definitely doesn't sound like John, Steve, Chris. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you if it's Rick. I couldn't tell you if it's Eddie Offord or somebody else that happened to be around. But I always imagined that that was Alan. Same on Sound Chaser, right? The cha-chas have some distinct voices, and Steve is going home, right? And you can hear John, and I always wondered if Alan was going, cha, you know.
I think it's probably likely. And certainly, yes, that voice, if you listen to it really carefully, it's certainly not the usual Yes choir on that, that's for sure. So I'm pretty sure it is, and particularly as Alan has a credit for backing vocals, so he's definitely doing some on there, I'm sure.
So from side two onwards, Alan brings in more exotic sounding instruments. What kind of things can you hear specifically?
So on the remembering, I think there's different kinds of cymbals, for example. I think there are China cymbals in there. And that seems to me to be foreshadowing Ritual a bit. And maybe some crotales or some kind of pitched percussion there.
You're right. So there's like the don the cap and close your eyes. There's definitely some choked or really tight cymbal or China there. And Alan's obviously playing a form of bells, da 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 da, in the opening section. So again, you're jogging my memory on that.
Yeah.
There also seems to be some sort of chimes, wind chimes and stuff like that, I'm pretty sure somewhere.
Yeah, there's lots of that in the ambient section. And you know, in both the remembering and Ritual, there's those sort of, I'm going to call it ambient sections, where Chris is kind of and Steve does some kind of like solo over it, and there's keyboard texture. In the Queen's Park live recording, that's where when they get to that part of Ritual, John and Kristen Steve do the out in the city running free, and they kind of like blended those two bits together. But yeah, there's a lot of wind chimes and a lot of individual sounds that maybe go unnoticed if you don't focus on capturing it, but it adds so much to the vibe of the music. So yeah. There you go. You brought up a couple of great examples that I wasn't thinking offhand, but they're really present.
Yes. Well, the opening side three actually is one of my favourite parts of the whole album, the ancient there. And I love the use of the huge different range of percussion instruments there. I mean, in Leaves of Green, there are even sort of little touches of castanets in the background, if you listen carefully enough. And the tam-tam or gong, I think he uses that very creatively and very interestingly, because I've never heard that kind of a big, huge percussion instrument playing on the beat. And he plays it on the beat for quite some time. And it sounds to me a bit like a kind of Javanese gamelan or some instrument like that, some Far East instrument. Do you know if Alan was interested in sounds from across the world?
I don't know personally that he's discussed with me the concept of using percussion from around the world, but there's definitely, if from the very first ring of the gong on the ancient, I think it fits the vibe of the song. Like I always, when I was 15, listening to the ancient, I was like running through some jungle in my mind, you know, like ancient world, South American ancient or African ancient or Southeast Asian ancient, you know, all kind of fitting that. But to your point of the ancient, right, it opens with this large ringing of the gong. And, you know, from a production perspective, you don't hear the strike. You kind of just have the expansion of the sound of that gong. And even those it would be hard to strike what I imagine to be like two hi-hat cymbals with your foot and get that level of ring unless you separated them enough. So I was used to play around with that. It's not somebody slamming their hi-hats with their hand. No. It's almost as if they're either holding two cymbals and crashing them together, like sort of like a marching style hi-hat.
Yeah.
Or he's using his foot, but it's opened wide enough that it just touches to a certain degree that it rings. And with Rick's sort of sound behind that, it's like the perfect texture.
Yeah, and I love the way that he has those long sounds, but also, and perhaps, you know, Steve having a long guitar moment on top as well, but then he has some very, very short sounds as well. I mean, you've already mentioned the whatever it is, drumsticks on a hard surface or the rim of a drum or whatever. But he likes to give it that kind of strange ambience by having long sounds and those very, very short sounds at the same time.
Absolutely. So the opening of Ritual is iconic with the percussion adding so much. I think Alan plays quite melodically at times, even almost doubling Squire's line. How would you describe the way Squire and White play together?
Yes, that is definitely one of the qualities that I think makes them, you know, low-key the greatest rhythm section of the 70s and 80s, right? Like they're so in tune together. And while I imagine, while Howe and Anderson are coming up with these structures and these pieces and Rick is filling things in, you know, sometimes the bass line, it's not defined by what the others are playing, right? It's its own entity. Mm. And so the bass and the drums on the wrist run right? You can almost hear the bass line playing its melody above. And it's synchronous, to answer your question. So I think they must have been working those things out. And if you go to the Yes Show's version of Ritual, where Chris is doing the wow, right, the sort of like quiet beginning of the bass solo. And then they go into like three rounds of jamming in the live version, and it's really just one in the studio where it flows right through, right? And then, of course, they take the bit from the ancient, and they bring that. So that live version is the like epitome of Chris and Alan having this idea of where their jam is going to go and just ripping it in sync. So I would describe them as being very much in tune with each other and having designed those parts and probably hours of jamming those parts to get them to the place where they were just second nature doing it.
Yeah. Well, that probably took place, didn't it, in the Manticore Theatre that we know that they used for at least a month of rehearsing before they went into the studio to actually record Tales itself. And that kind of synergy, yes, you're right, between Squire and White on this album is remarkable. And I think one other thing to say is that clearly through the 80s and then with the electronic percussion, Bill Bruford was always trying to make drums more melodic. But I do feel that there's a lot of melodic playing. And perhaps that's because of, well, as we've already mentioned, Alan's piano playing and other kinds of music that he was so adept at coming through in the percussion lines as well. Because when he does play in unison with Squire at various points, including Ritual, I do think you can hear the same melodies, as it were, even though it's mostly untuned percussion.
Right. So the perfect example of that, I think, is you mentioned the intro of Ritual, right? Mm. And so on the album, after they kind of have the strikes, right? Da-doom-doom-ba. It just breathes, right?
Mm.
Da-doom-doom-ba. And Steve's going, na-na-na-na-na, da-doom-doom-ba. It's just breathing.
Mm.
Whereas live, it's a different scenario, right? You're in, you know, whatever arena or stadium you're in, and you go da doom doom da doom 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 da doom doom da doom da doom doom da doom doom. But like, that's a line from guest shows that's not on the album, which breathes. So even like with TMR, when we've talked about, I think Ritual is the song that is the most different in its presentation live than its studio version. And I'm not counting Close to the Edge, because Alan didn't record that. Obviously, that would be a fair comparison, but it's two different human beings. And I think the approach of Ritual on the studio is just, it's, you can learn two different songs almost if you're a band trying to perform it. And if one of us goes and focuses on Yes shows and the other goes and focuses on the album, I've mapped out, much to my own, wow, this is amazing, how different the parts are. And not only the expansions of parts from Ritual live to Ritual on the studio album, comparing Yes shows to the album, I should say. There's a whole bunch of expansions of parts. And John's Nous Sommes du Soleil is different. And they had the bit from The Ancient. And Chris goes on three rounds of soloing. But there's other details as well that I didn't know until the guitar player, Johnny Brune, said, well, there's this. And the keyboard player said, well, there's that. And I'm like, wow, it's just two living entities. But it goes back to your question of the studio album being this majestic thing that is intended to breathe and soar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what Alan brings to it, his innate understanding of that concept of the soaring and breathing nature of the album. But we can't talk about the Tales percussion without mentioning the amazing timpani and drumming and kitchen sink section of Ritual itself. And so I'm interested to hear what you have to say about that live as well, because clearly a passage such as that can't be done live the same way as it's done in the studio with overdubs and so on, as Mark has already mentioned. So what do you think of that section, and do you prefer it to that battle sequence on Gates?
Interesting. So I knew we would, of course, talk about, we'll call it the drum solo, you know, Alan's drum solo and Ritual. And this is something that I could spend a lot of time on, but I'll try to be succinct. So two things. If I may bring my own personal experience into this, because it's not meant to be about me, but the first time I played Ritual with a band was on the Cruise to the Edge in the After Hours prog jam. And there was no rehearsal. A bunch of people got together. And I remember the other musicians were like, so Joe, what are you going to do? You're going to do this elaborate drum solo. And, you know, they talked about cutting it. And I said, first of all, it's not because I want to play a drum solo. It's not about me. But if you're going to cut the drum section of Ritual, I'm backing out. Number one, this is the song, right?
Then
I grabbed a friend of mine named Mark DeGregory, who's the drummer of a great original prog band called Orpheus Nine. And we scripted out how we would do more than one drummer's worth of percussion to try to satisfy it. But the approach was that I learned Alan's parts, the primary drum parts, exactly as they were on the album.
Mm.
But Alan never played those parts exactly as they were on the album. There was some creative decisions to do it differently, almost like the intro of Sound Chaser. To play the intro of Sound Chaser exactly, or close to exactly, let's be honest, I don't know who can play it exactly, close to exactly like on the album, versus more of a free form Alan kicking the ass off the drums, but not in as specific of a structure.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between the live version of the drum solo of Ritual than on the album, which I think is very specific. And, you know, Mraz adding those crazy sounds or whatever they decided in production versus the way Rick did it. One thing I'll also note is how often Yes themselves have used the track of the clang, 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 clang that's happening.
Yeah.
And I don't have a criticism of using that track because that is part of the authenticity of what people expect to hear, that I think you need X number of instruments tuned, not tuned, clang, 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 clang.
Yeah.
All those things, all stuff, you know, yeah. I use breath, but I don't think it's breath. I think it's some kind of cymbals. But all of that is the ambiance in which Alan plays. And I would describe it as an extremely melodic, to use your term, an extremely melodic drum solo. That is pure melody in drum form.
Well, that's right. And of course, that goes back to both what I said about Bill Bruford a minute ago being interested in melody with percussion, but also later on the Tormato tour, where he did use the drum synthesizer created for him by Derek Dearden that we spoke to on the podcast some time ago. Oh. And that had the ability to create harmony with different strikes of a drum. So I think what we're digging for and getting is that there is much more of a melodic feel to Alan's playing on Tales particularly, and perhaps across the whole of Yes's output.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder to be a melodic drummer live because of the setting. But on Tales, you're getting probably the most melodic contributions of Alan in terms of, again, the pitch of each drum in relation to what he's striking is very purposeful. You get it in the introduction of the reveal, all throughout the revealing. Again, if you study Alan's parts, they're so, I hate to say the word, but they're so perfect for what the album is.
Yeah. Did you have a lot of fun with that percussion part of Ritual?
Yes. And we are in the process of putting Ritual together for our 2024 shows. So I am taking the conductor role, so to speak, of figuring out, like, I want to be able to answer this question in 6 months and say, it was an unbelievable experience. And one of the ways I want to do that is by making it immersive, right? So you'd say, well, John, Steve Howe didn't play percussion, but that's okay. I'd like to talk to Johnny Bruins about playing something on percussion. So I want all the members of TMR playing an element of percussion. And I brought up the sample track. Like, I don't think I want to use the sample track, but if we can't produce the same environment sonically that people would anticipate, then maybe we would use it. So frankly speaking, there's some questions to be answered, but ultimately I think I'm going to play the drum part like it's written on the album, that part that I described as very melodic.
Yeah.
And the transitions into where the timpani comes in, into the little crazy keyboard. Like, maintain the integrity of what was on the album there, especially because Yes didn't do it that way. And so I always say this, I'm not Alan White, you're not Chris Squire. They can go on as long as they want because they're them and we want to see that. But I want us to maintain the integrity of the album because that's what a fan would expect of a tribute band. That's what I would want to see, not some guy trying to play a 12-minute drum solo. So it's gonna be great. It's gonna kick ass. And in 6 months, I'll tell you that, hey, remember the time you asked me on the Tales Alan White podcast what it was like to play it? I'm gonna say it was awesome.
Yeah, I'll look forward to that.
Alan's piano part is maybe one of the best ways to remember him, Perhaps his approach after the mayhem of the percussion section shows a lot about him as a musician and a person. He always knew what to add for the mood of the music, didn't he?
Yeah. There's a number of times where, you know, I know Alan personally through many, many instances of, yes, circa drum clinics, what have you. I haven't sat down and gone to his house and had Christmas dinner. Like, it's not like that, right? Mm. This is my childhood hero who I got to know over the years. But I have some distinct memories of thinking how deep Alan is. And that concept of the piano, if Nous sommes du soleil, following the craziness of the solo, is a representation of, I'll say, the depth of the person. Turn of the century. I think he'll tell you that his favorite song on the latter was If Only You Knew.
Hmm.
And I remember my father often pointing out to me during the most quiet parts of shows where there were no drums, how deeply into it Alan was. And his eyes closed, his head rocking. It could have been in, you know, Hold Out the Window, Siberian Katru, and he's just in a vibe. Or some of the real quiet parts of Awaken, and he's just playing the crotales, but he seems to be so deeply embedded. So I think the word deepness comes to mind if you're studying Alan closely enough in both his physical demeanor and those really sort of light and beautiful parts that he's contributed in the form of piano, bell, could be marimba, but certainly crotale. That type of percussion, I think, represents the depth of Alan White.
Yeah. And how do you think Alan took the experience from Tales and then expanded on it or developed it for Relayer?
Well, I always think, I don't know the answer factually, but I always think that Relayer has more of the ferocious and less of the controlled. Right, when I gave the example of Ritual, da doom doom ba, and letting it breathe, instead you're getting, like, I'm going to refer to the parts of Gates of Delirium, just for example, where they transition from the first verse right into the choose and renounce. Trying to learn that fill, I just repeat. What is Alan actually playing? Oh, he's using his left hand first. And he's going, just what he plays on the album there, it's so chaotic and it's ferocious. It's less, I don't want to use the word safe because that's not how I view Tales, but what he does live on Tales and then what he does in the studio on Relayer, I think is bringing the live element of his style, the more ferocious, speedy, heavy hitting part, and then bringing that to an album where it actually seemed to fit the mode of this war and peace concept where, okay, I'm going to be that much more ferocious because we're talking about, we're creating a piece about war. And then Sound Chaser, you know, it's all talked about all the time. I mean, what he does on Sound Chaser is like, maybe another person can get 99% close to what Alan played. And trust me, I've tried, right? So in all humbleness, it's like, how can anyone recreate what Alan did through the first section of Sound Chaser? So I think there's just a freedom there that also fit where Yes was going.
I actually have a question about Sound Chaser. I'm curious to ask you. That drum part, the tom fill part that he does after that little beginning part there, every time I've heard them play that song live, he's never played that intro, like the tom part, as he did on the album. Never has he played it the same way. Do you think it's because he's one of these guys who doesn't play the same thing twice, or is it because it was just one of these things that he just did as a fluke and he's just never bothered to sit down and relearn it? I'm just always curious why you think he never played it the way that it is on album.
It's a good point. And I mentioned the same thing, Ritual of Drum Solo is another great example, right? The drum solo of Ritual, rather. Said that like Master Yoda. So anyway, I couldn't tell you exactly why, but I do think as a listener, what we interpret as a signature moment could have been an accident, could have been a whim, could have been what it was. And I think of often like certain feels and certain songs, and it makes me wonder, I wonder if that just happened. And then they went back and said, well, now I've got to play that live. And I think there's some, I'm gonna give you another example. In Tempest Fugit, there's like the studio run through version on the, maybe it's the Rhino remaster or of course anything on YouTube. But there's a feel, I want to say it's going into the second verse. If you were dead, you would want to be near me. I mean, I can't imagine the song without that feel.
Mm.
And if there was a concert that I saw Yes do it, and he didn't do the feel, and I thought, oh my God, my heart, how could that be? And I think it's interesting because he might not have been in that same headspace. But if you go listen to the run through, it's not there. And it made me think it could have just been the way he felt the music in that one moment. And we as the fans are like, you must always play that feel.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
My point in that analogy is it could have been the moment. And then he may have listened to it and it's like, well, how do I play that? And he might have just felt that I played it that day. Now I'm going to play it this day. And that's the one thing that I guess at this point we may never know of exactly why. But I think even Yes has talked about, you know, when they stuck all the tape together and went back to listen to the final product and then kind of learn how to play what they finalized via the album editing, right?
Yeah.
There was an element of we know all our parts, but now we need to play the way we taped it all together. It could just be a product of that.
Yeah.
I'm curious about this, and I think me and Kevin talked about this, but now that we have you on here, this would be interesting to ask you. Do you have a favorite side of Tales?
Well, there's 7 days in a week, and there's four sides of Tales. Would it be fair to... I'm going to answer your question, but I think I have to say that in all fairness, the one I'm listening to is usually my favorite. I would say Ritual. Mm. And growing up, the Yes Show's version of that, it always blew me away. Mm. Like that to me was, you can't have a higher performing band in the world than this moment of Yes performing Ritual. But if I put on the Revealing Science of God right now, oh, that's the greatest song in the world. And it almost is. You can't argue it. I will say that the Remembering and the Ancient, I believe, require a different headspace or a different approach because of the moments that are larger in nature that I say don't have that attractive vocal or that attractive melody. Mm-hmm. There's just longer bits of things. Like if a person listens to Pink Floyd and they think of Dark Side of the Moon and you play them Echoes, they're going to say, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? So I think there's more depth to listening to the Remembering. But TMR played the Remembering. We actually only did it live once because COVID, but we were preparing the Remembering. COVID happened. We did it once on a live stream at an event called Progstock. And there's actually, if you go on our YouTube, you go to Total Mass Retain, Yes Tribute Band, and you look up our version of the Remembering, I'm so proud of it. We can get a few percent points more accurate if we did it more than once live. But my point is, going through that, learning Alan's parts, learning the vocals, Steve's vocals, etc., it was just such an experience. And it's not to be diminished that the Remembering is just as good as Revealing or Ritual. And when you get to the Ancient, I think the harder thing to digest is that Steve's exposition of a guitar idea, everything kind of has a second and a third exposition into more wild territory. So I think you have to be ready to take that on to get through the whole song with the level of appreciation. So my favorite side of Tales, I'm going to say by a hair, Ritual, but I would say the live version of Ritual. But if I pick the studio track song, I'm going to say Revealing. So that's where I give you my long-winded response. Studio Revealing, live Ritual.
Brilliant. Well, can you sum up for us then, just before we finish and let you go, Joe, your assessment of Alan's total contribution to Tales, you know, compared with everybody else's?
I would say that Alan White, one may typically say that the drummer can be the glue that holds the band together.
Hmm.
And I would say that Alan White, through the entire album, is the dynamic, flexible entity that brings each piece to life for what I think it was intended based on John's idea. And what I mean by that is this majestic, revealing science of God, and Alan's playing fits that. Whereas on The Ancient, it's this concept of percussion, world percussion, jungle. So Alan's playing morphs into the spirit of, I think, where each song was intended to go. But yet, he plays things across all four parts that are callbacks to one another and that are a glue that binds the album together. Whereas one may notice when Steve does it, because a melody is a melody, and that melody is easier to retain and to recall when hearing it in another place. But I think if you were to study, as I know you folks have done, but from a drummer's perspective, someone who's intended to perform the pieces like Alan, you'll find that there's a theme to how he plays, either stylistically in places, sonically in terms of the way his instruments are tuned, and then, of course, pattern-wise, he repeats certain patterns in different places. So I think that Alan White is the glue of Tales and Topographic Oceans. And for a person's first album with such a band, I would go as far as to say that Alan White is a genius on Tales and Topographic Oceans. I love Alan. I miss him very much. And his spirit still continues on through all of us, through talking about his music, through sharing his music, and in my case personally, the honor of performing his music through Total Mass Routine.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much indeed, Joe, coming to talk about Alan and about his amazing and genius on on Tales. It's been fantastic to have you here today. Thank you very much indeed, Joe.
Such a pleasure. I thank you guys very, very much for your friendship. There's nothing more exciting than getting to talk about my favorite music with another bunch of crazy, educated, lunatic Yes fans such as yourself. So thank you both for the opportunity to spend some time thinking about my personal hero and to share it with the world. So thank you.